Hi, once again, welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We discuss birds on the show today. Rich Guthrie is here to help answer your questions about them, a veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, a former compiler of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society. Rich is our resident avian expert, also joined today by a semi-regular on the program, Nancy Castillo, co-owner of Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop in Saratoga Springs, New York, publisher of the Zen Bird Feeder blog, contributing writer to Bird Watchers Digest and Watching Backyard Birds publications. Nice to have you both here. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment on the Vox Pop page of our website. It's wamc.org/voxpop. Check in on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can even email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But we love your calls. 800-348-2551. Rich and Nancy, nice to have you back on the show.
Hey, Ray, good to be back.
You know,
fun to be here.
Having Nancy here is always a treat because, A, Nancy usually brings really good coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Check. We have that now. What are those things? I see a raccoon staring me at a penguin. What are those things you brought?
Mascots, huh?
Yeah, what is that?
The beady-eyed guy is Rascal the Raccoon, our newest seed shape.
Okay, so this is a thing that you would feed birds with.
Yep, it's solid sunflower chips and peanuts, so it would appeal to just about any bird that you put out there. So, cute little mask.
Yeah, but it'll be kind of depressing when the birds eat the raccoon.
Start working on them.
Yeah.
He joins his friends Preston the Penguin and also Buttons the Snowman, which are all seed shapes, really popular. We do have Hanukkah coming up. We do have Christmas coming up. So
what do you do? You just put them out on a table out in the backyard and hope the squirrels don't get them?
You can put them that way. The squirrels would like them, but if you have a squirrel-proof location that's baffled and away from jumping off points, you can put these guys out and enjoy the... I mean, it's just so super high cute factor to see your birds eating these. So
that is cute. And actually, they look pretty tasty. I might have a bite here in a little bit.
A little healthy, too, all those nuts and sunflower seeds.
Delicious.
Yep.
All right. Well, I tell you what, let's go right to the phones at 800-348-2551. Teresa in Stillwater, you're first.
Good afternoon. My question is about do peanuts go bad? I feed the birds. I don't know if they're raw. Yeah, they must be raw peanuts, unshelled, and I buy a 40-pound bag. And so I had some left over from last season. I just put them out again. And I noticed the birds do not feed on them very much. And I'm just wondering, can they taste whether or not they're a bad peanut?
Well, I've heard, and I don't know for a fact. Nancy, have you? I've heard that that peanuts, especially peanut butter, can be not good for people. Old peanuts. Remember that ate a peanut? It was rotten.
yes. Yeah.
No, I'm not.
Oh, that was an old Kitty Diddy.
No, it's fine.
Okay.
They can go rancid, just like because they're very, very oily product.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So the oils go rancid over time. So they could be that they've entered that stage, especially if you've had them for a year. If they're outside and they're fairly fresh, what you have to do with peanuts is make sure that they don't get, if it's been really rainy, they can get wet. And then they start expanding and clumping together.
Oh.
So there's a number of things with those unshelled peanuts that could go wrong. You know, either the age or else just kind of getting soggy and clumpy within your feeder.
Mm. I keep my seed in 50-gallon or galvanized trash cans with covers.
Yes.
So
yeah.
That, you know, keeps the seed dry and all. But, you know, I had them in there all summer long.
Yeah.
And I fed the birds all summer long, but not the peanuts because, you know, I used the other hanger for hummingbird feeder, so I couldn't have everything there.
Yeah. Time is probably just taking its toll on it. The other thing, Teresa, is that, you know, we especially with these oily seeds like this or peanuts or Niger seed, over time, they do dry out.
And birds don't like them. I know that's the case with the Niger seed, the black, the little seeds that the goldfinches like.
Right, the thistle.
The thistle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I've seen where I've done the same thing you did, and that is to use up some old stock and find out that it just sits there.
Right.
And the birds ignore it.
Okay. So save your money. Don't buy in a bigger quantity than you're going to be able to go through with, you know, in that season.
In the season, yeah.
Yep.
Do you sell those kind of peanuts at your place?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Okay. And how big a container do you sell?
Fives, tens, and twenties.
Okay.
And yes, I will say that I bought a bag of those peanut shells, the shell peanuts, earlier this year when the Stokes were in town. And I'm still using them. And the birds are, I'll tell you, I have a special peanut feeder, and the chickadees and titmice and nuthatches and downy woodpeckers and blue jays. Well, the blue jays have a hard time getting them, but they try.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. There's quite a few variety that like them. And I've been feeding them for, you know, 4 or 5 years. And this is the first time I've noticed that they haven't really started flocking to them.
Okay.
But maybe is it still early with enough outside or, you know, food in the wild?
No, that's not it, because they're lined up at my feeder. There's two or three of them on at a time. And so I think it's just a matter of they probably have tasted them and said,
not so good.
Not so good today.
Okay.
Teresa, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you, dear.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie and Nancy Costello here to answer your bird questions. And we go to Lori in Pittsfield. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm calling for my mother. She loves the birds, and she feeds them. It's been years now. She feeds them all year round. And this year she is moving to Florida for the winter, and she won't be back until spring. And she's so worried about the birds because she's going to have to stop feeding them, and very concerned, especially about her mourning doves. She has like a couple dozen out there that come every day, and along with all the other birds too. And so I just like your thoughts on that. Will they move on somewhere else? She's just so worried.
You can rest assured that if she's not feeding the birds anymore, they will find sources of food at other places, whether natural food sources or nearby feeders. It's an old wives' tale, I guess, that birds become dependent upon your feeders. It just really doesn't happen. So she can enjoy her time in Florida knowing that her doves will find food elsewhere.
Okay.
And as a variation to that old country tale that the birds depend on these feeders and will retard their migration schedule, not true as well.
Okay.
The birds will leave. The ones that want to go south will go south on schedule. What it does, perhaps one that needs a little assistance, it'll toughen them up, give them a little energy, and strengthen them for their arduous journey south. So either way, feed the birds. When you want to fly south, go for it.
Okay.
Okay, I'll tell her. I'm sure that's going to be reassuring to her. Thank you very much.
Good. Lori, thank you very much. And it is Vox Pop. It is WAMC. Rich Guthrie, Nancy Costello here, Ray Graff. And let's see Pete in Albany. Pete, you're up.
Good afternoon. My girlfriend grew up in Canada, and she used to summer in New Brunswick. And she and her grandfather used to remark on this bird they used to hear that sounded like Tom Peepity, Peepity, and I'm just wondering if you know what bird that would be.
Yeah, right on it. In fact, a variation of that mnemonic is the verbal equivalent to what a bird song sounds like, and it's "Oh, sweet Canada, Canada, Canada."
Oh, really?
How appropriate for New Brunswick.
Yeah.
That would be the white-throated sparrow.
Okay.
And let me see if you can bear with me.
Oh,
Ray,
this is
will
good.
Put
okay, he's going to make some sounds. I love.
Did you just do that with your fingers and your mouth?
I just whistled. Yes,
you just whistled.
That's pretty good.
No
That's
fingers.
Great.
Oh, he is good. Well, he's had a lot of coffee. He's good.
Yeah, right.
Good coffee too. Bird song coffee. Yes.
Well, thank you very much.
You're
right.
Quite welcome, Pete.
Could you do that one more time, Rich?
Oh, sweet Canada, Canada, Canada. They say it better than I try.
Let's go to Blanche in Cheshire. Blanche, you're up.
Hi. I have a question wondering. We put some fairly new bird feeders at a distance on our property. And the past week or so, we've seen some birds flocking around one house in particular, and my husband thought they were bluebirds. Is it possible that this time of year birds would nest?
No, what it is and it may well be bluebirds, that what they do is they'll use a nest box for a winter overnight roost. So they'll, and a group of them will gather together, spend the night in there for sharing the mutual warmth and security and safety that a nest box provides for cold winter nights.
Will they stay? Will they stay through the winter?
Oh, yes. Yeah, bluebirds do stick around. So there's a good chance that that if you have an appropriate place for them to find shelter, that they'll continue to be in that in that area.
That's wonderful.
Well,
that's good
nice
to hear. We love the bluebirds, but we don't get them very often.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
It's good incentive.
Probably a good time to just remind everybody that cleaning out bird your nest boxes right now is a good time so that they can roost in it during the winter.
Terrific. Yeah. Blanche, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
And we'll take a break here. 1-800-348-2551. Vox Pop. More of your bird questions and bird calls coming up.
Support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting the exhibition Dinotopia, The Fantastical Art of James Gurney, arkellmuseum.org. Lori Stilwell, CPAPC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StilwellCPA.com. Kingsway Communities, Schenectady, New York, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including independent living apartments, home care, and more. 518-393-8800. And Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com.
Charlie Bird Parker here on The Bird Show, and Rich Guthrie is our guest, Nancy Castillo. Ray Graff, your host, 1-800-348-2551 is the number. You know, sometimes when Rich is on the show, we'll do a mystery bird call, and Rich informs me that he has one today.
That just occurs to me.
All right, well, what do you got? And the way it works is you call in with your question. If you have an answer of what the mystery bird call is, you let us know. All right, Rich, let's hear it.
Okay, well, here's one that I use almost daily. Right. And effectively.
Okay.
All right. You ready?
Sure.
Coo, 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 coo.
Sorry?
Try it again.
All right.
Coo, 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 coo.
Is this that Cocoa Puffs bird?
Not with my Wheaties.
All right. Do it again.
Coo, 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 coo.
Okay. So coo, that's coo, coo, coo. That's the mystery bird call. You feel free to weigh in on that when you call in with your question. And back to the phone we go. Russ on the road. Russ, I hope your hand's free.
Yes, I am.
All right.
I think your screener must have thought I was a little addled here, anyways, with my question. he questioned me at length about it. Anyways, I'm an avid hunter, and when I'm out in the woods, not only do I pick up all the trash that other people leave around, I bring out suet blocks that I buy from the store, and I leave them around at various spots in the woods for the birds over the winter, and I don't know whether I'm offsetting any of nature's bounds, whether I should or shouldn't be doing that. I basically, wherever I'm walking along, I'll take a suet block out, take it out of the plastic, and stick it on a branch on a tree and leave it there.
That's a great question.
Not only that, I think it's a great idea. You're onto something there. Number one, it's not going to have any adverse effect that I can think of. Nancy?
Okay.
Nope. I don't see any problem with it.
You know, for what it's worth, you'll make a couple of those wild birds out there very happy. And, you know, as remote the area that you may be in, the birds will find it. And the guys and gals who do find it will appreciate it. They'll be back. And when it's all gone, they'll just move on and find, you know, go through the rigors of winter on their own.
Yeah, that was what you had actually answered that earlier about whether or not. I couldn't imagine they would become dependent on a random block of suet that's stuck in the woods by me, but I didn't know whether, you know, I was sort of cheating nature when I was doing that. But I figured winters are pretty long and cold, and I hang these things up high enough, usually where I don't think there's too many squirrels around, and I figured, you know, it certainly can't hurt.
Yeah, and I think the nature of those blocks is that the squirrels will probably leave them alone.
Really?
Oh, they will.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm assuming, well, wait a minute now. No. Are they in a container of some sort, a wire mesh container?
Well, they come in a plastic container.
Uh-huh.
If I were home, I would put them in a wire container, and these I don't. I don't leave the plastic or anything out there. I just basically find a a tree that has a rather sharp branch on it, and I hang it on the branch and I leave it there. It's usually cold anyway, so
yes.
They stay pretty well formed.
The squirrels would if they had the opportunity, mostly because within most of those suet blocks are seeds and nuts they're crazy about. So, you know, so they could be getting to them, but, you know, if that's a price that you're willing to pay, you know, on the chance that you're helping out the birds.
Yeah.
And,
Russ, great call. Thanks.
Oh, wait, hey, 1 second. That's not a woodpecker, is it, by the way, that call that
you said? No. But
okay, thank you.
More hints to follow. But
okay, thank you.
Russ, thanks a lot for the call. All right, not a woodpecker. 1-800-348-2551. Carrie in Plainfield, you're on. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Rich.
Hi.
Listening to you, Rich, it sounds like the bird that's in my grandmother's old cuckoo clock.
Ah, it does. And in fact, I will tell you that when I first heard it, I got my tape recorder out and I started recording it. And I had in mind to send it to Cornell University, where they have a terrific audio recording station down there. And I found out afterwards I would have looked pretty silly if I did that.
Okay.
Anyways, I have a real easy question for you, okay?
What you got?
Well, as I'm looking out my window right now, there's two bald eagles up in a tree overlooking the pond that I live on.
Oh, wonderful.
And they've been here for about a week and a half now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the easy question is, they both look like identical to each other. Is there a difference in the gender? Is it a male or, you know, two males? Could it be a male and a female?
Only,
they look the same?
Only in size.
Because they both have the white heads, the white tail.
Yep, adult eagles, male and female, will have the dark body, the white head, the white tail, but the female will be larger.
Oh, the female will be larger?
Yes, that's true. The females of all of the raptors, all the hawks and owls, the female will be larger.
Okay, because I was looking at my Kaufman field guide here and turned the radio on near on. So I got to give you a call. You know,
yeah,
to find in the book.
Well, you can tell them, especially when they're side by side like that.
Yeah, they are very.
Yeah,
right now they're about 6 feet away from each other.
Well, you know, it's a bonded pair because they don't tolerate strangers that close. Well, for the most part, not for any prolonged period. During the wintertime, eagles become a little more sociable than during the nesting season, and they will tolerate a close proximity from foreign eagles, but not that close.
Is there any chance that they could winter here?
Oh, sure. Eagles do winter in our listening area. However, they prefer to find moving water. Some sort of open water.
Well, I'm right on a pond.
Right. And when that freezes over, they might move on to down by the river, down by
the outlet or the inlet.
The outlet.
Yeah.
And where they will have access to fish. But they will take carrion that may be out there on the ice. And when I'm down my way, if I find roadkill during the winter, I'll pick it up and toss it out onto the ice, and sure enough, the eagles will find it.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, thank you very much for the call. 1-800-348-2551. Nancy Castillo from Wild Birds Unlimited here. Also, Rich Guthrie. All right, Rich, once again, recap our mystery bird call for today.
Okay, the sound of it goes like this. Coo, 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 coo. Coo, 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 coo.
Okay.
And, okay, it's kind of like what I like to think of as sweet nothings.
Sweet nothings, that's a clue.
That's a clue.
All right, here's one from the website, WAMC.org. We saw a tailless titmouse yesterday. That's the first time I've ever had to say that on the radio. We saw a tailless titmouse yesterday and had several tailless titmice and chickadees last winter. Is losing their tails part of their normal development?
No. Cat survivors.
Aha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's where tails come in handy, among other things. It's the one that... that you don't see, that you have to worry about.
Okay, let's go back go ahead.
Just the good thing is that it does grow back.
Oh, that is good.
Yes.
All right, fair
enough.
Yeah,
birds need their tail for, among other things, flight stability.
Sure, like an airplane.
I like an airplane.
All right, let's go to Phyllis in Albany. Phyllis.
Yes, hi, guys. What a pleasure to listen to you.
Thank you.
A couple of years ago, I was on my way to work early in the morning, driving north on 787, and I saw hovering in the sky a bright red bird from head to tail. He was red. Wasn't my imagination. The bird was red. I thought it was a hawk, but because it was soaring and near on his way to the river. And nobody seems to be able to give me a clue as to what it could have been.
Now, a couple of questions for you.
Yes.
How big was it?
Well, it was in the sky. But
yes.
It was large.
It was a big bird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how close to it were you, roughly speaking?
He was circling toward the north, and I was driving north, so it was high in the sky. It wasn't
very high up? Yeah. Okay, was it a sunny day or a cloudy day?
Yes, it was a beautiful day.
Okay. Well, and one other thing, was there snow on the ground?
Oh, no.
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 Okay. Well, I'm thinking that perhaps what you were seeing was the, and I'm going to go out on a limb here.
Please do.
As some birds do. I'm going to suggest that you were seeing the sun shining through the feathers of a bird in the sky, and which would give it not a bright red, not a cardinal red coloration, but perhaps a dull red or a brick red or...
No.
No.
Okay. Because I was driving north, and the sun was...
Someplace else, yeah.
Yeah, the sun was not a factor, and I had a very clear view of this bird, and I was absolutely fascinated. I would have pulled over had I not been on 787 just to watch him.
Okay, well, this sometimes happened, and I'm pretty sure that my friend, the former president of the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, is yelling into his radio once again that he knows exactly what it is. And from your description, and I am not getting a good visual on it.
Okay.
So what'll happen is I'll have a phone message when I get home telling me, you idiot, it was a...
Hey, no.
Oh, well, he does things like that.
Really?
He's cruel. He's
rough.
Mean. He's tough.
Jeez.
He said, I should have known. But anyway, Phyllis, we're going to work on that, and I urge you to stand by.
Okay.
And
very
we'll
good.
See if we can come up with it. If not today, then next time round.
Grand. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
okay, Phyllis.
Bye. Now, you know, when you're looking at things in the sky and there's no reference or no tree or anything else or buildings, is it possible that she was looking at, say, a cardinal much closer than she thought?
Not hovering.
Oh, it was hovering?
Cardinals very seldom stay still in the air.
Oh.
So this bird was hovering or soaring, and I'm thinking she's right on, that it was a raptor of some sort.
Very red raptor?
Very well, no. We don't have it. In Europe, there is a red kite. That is a soaring raptor, beautiful soaring raptor, but we don't have those here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a remote possibility it can be something very exotic, such as a flamingo.
Okay.
Flamingo
flying around town? That's odd.
Not likely.
No, and Nancy is looking in the book, so we'll see if we can come up with something.
I guess what I was thinking was, you know, a kestrel, you know, the red, the kind of orangish.
But not it would... perhaps they're a tiny hawk, the size of a blue jay or a robin, and they don't come across as being large, and really red. You know, the red that Phyllis was describing is a little bit beyond a blue jay.
Well, I mean, could it be a mutant?
Always possible, but though red mutants are very, very rare. We do have white ones, and we do have black ones, and we do have some that have extraneous yellow. But red is sort of off the charts. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. All right, let's go over to Rich in Gloversville. Rich, you're on.
Yes, I'd like to ask about the bears. A while back, we had a bear come into our backyard and just wipe out our bird feeders. He was particularly fond of suet cakes. So I usually, around this time of year, stop feeding the birds, and I'd like to know if you know when the bears fall asleep. So I can start feeding them again.
Well, Nancy,
because I don't want bears in my backyard.
Nancy has a perfect answer for that.
Oh, he said about 9 o'clock.
Nice.
Thank you, Nancy.
Yeah. Always good to have you here.
Yes. I would keep the feeders in. You know, winter comes later these years, and bears stay out until they're uncomfortable in the cold, then they go into their hibernation. So they're still roaming around. If you have feeders and bears, don't let them mix. Hold the feeders up. Go ahead.
How do I keep the bears out of the feeders?
Make the feeders unapproachable, out of reach. I use a clothesline where I put the feeders out there where they can't get to it.
It's a little bit labor intensive, but make sure, but bring your feeders in every single night, put them back out in the morning. If you really want them out there during bear season, you need to bring them in at night for sure.
This bear came in broad daylight.
Yes, and that happens. Bears become very, very bold, and it's inadvisable when you have one that's that daring, that comfortable around people, to do everything you can to discourage them from being around. And if it means foregoing the bird feeding until after hibernation, then I'm afraid you might have to do that. It's not something to mess with.
Okay. Some other recommendations, Rich. Let your neighbors know so that they bring in their bird feeders also. But also think, is there any cat food outside? Is there any dog food? How's the garbage covered up and everything? Because bird feeders are not the only human-provided source of food out there for them.
I see.
Go ahead.
Also, is your bird a morning dove?
No.
Ah.
The nice guess,
good
though.
Good try, though, yes. Rich. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, here's one from Robert on Facebook. On Monday, I watched as overhead small flocks of Canada geese in their V's flew and honked above. I've lived in the Hudson Valley since 1975. In the past, their numbers seemed much greater. I remember one October, about 2003, when they flew by for hours as I was at my daughter's cross-country track meet at Maple Hills High School. That was the last time I saw such numbers. Is this because their numbers have decreased or because the migration patterns have been altered? I don't think their numbers are any less. I see them in many fields and water bodies throughout Columbia County where we live.
Well, what's happening is the Canada goose used to be the true harbinger of the changing seasons. They'd be flying south in great flocks in the fall, and flying north in the spring. And we always look forward to those as, just reminders that the winter's coming or summer's coming. They've changed their ways. I'm sure that what you're referring to is that they now have become more resident in the area. And so there's not so much migration as there used to be. Now, there are still some traditional migrants that come over. Usually, you'll see them on those cold or cool autumn mornings, autumn days, where they'll be flying very high and honking away in their long skeins on their way south to the Chesapeake Bay or beyond. I don't think the numbers of the northern ones that are coming through have decreased any. It's just that we're seeing more and more of them in our backyards, that the numbers that of the traditional ones is not as impressive as they used to be.
Okay.
You used to look up at every flight going by and say, another 100, another 200, 500, wow. Now there's 200, 300, 500 going by, but we have 700 feeding on the lawn down by the golf course.
So it's a matter of perspective then.
I think that's part of it. And but from what I know, the numbers have not changed, nor have the migration pathways changed.
Okay. All right, let's go to the phones and Merle in Argyle. Merle, you're on with Nancy Castillo and Rich Guthrie.
Oh, hi, guys. My question has to do with mating behavior, or at least that's what I thought it was, of flickers.
Okay.
I had two flickers in the south yard playing up and down on fence posts, one chasing the other. They just hop from one fence post to the next and follow each other around. And I've never hardly ever seen two flickers together, and I would just assume it was mating, but it was just last month in October. And I'm thinking that was, even though it was a warm month, I didn't think that they'd be mating at this time of year.
No, you're right about that part, but what you may have been seeing is young birds begging for food, following their parents around, and the parents trying to shake them and tell them to, empty the nest, move on.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's so it might have been food interaction, and also young woodpeckers and some of the other bird species out there tend to be playful, and I think it may nest mates, young birds out of the same nest may be interacting in a puppy like fashion one to the other. So
I've seen like downies will chase each other.
Yes.
Even this time of year. So they're not really, the mating season is not now.
You're right about that part. That's correct.
Okay.
And then one other factor comes into play, and that is especially with some of our more resident. Now, flickers are a type of woodpecker. and as you know.
Yeah.
And they are the migratory woodpeckers. They mostly leave town for the winter. The other ones that are that do stick around, such as the downy woodpecker and the hairy woodpecker and the pileated, will try to set their winter territorial boundaries down. So they'll be dancing around trying to entice or encourage another bird to move away. So there may be some of that territorial interaction setting up for the winter months ahead.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
Merle, thank you very much for the call. And our number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Before we go to break, Rich, one more time, the mystery bird call.
Coo, 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 coo. Coo, 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 coo.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back on Vox Pop.
Support comes from Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com. Sunflower Natural Food Market, Woodstock, accepting pre-orders for humanely raised organic and natural holiday turkeys, vegan tofurkey also available. On Facebook, Twitter, and SunflowerNatural.com. Smith College Museum of Art, presenting second Friday, November 8th, 4 to 8 p.m., featuring activities for children and adults and the exhibit River of Gold, Pre-Columbian Treasures from Sitio Conti, smith.edu/artmuseum. And Don Muller Gallery, Northampton, Massachusetts, specializing in jewelry, custom designs, handcrafted glass, and gifts from American artists since 1978. Facebook and DonMullerGallery.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. Our web wizard Facebook guy, Tom Job, popped in, but I didn't know what he said. Our guests today, Nancy Castillo, and Rich Guthrie. Nancy, you obviously have a website at Wild Birds Unlimited.
We absolutely do. It's saratogasprings.wbu.com.
Okay.
And from there you can access our blog, our Facebook page. We're on Facebook at Facebook.com/WBU Saratoga.
So you can find the Zen Bird Feeder blog there.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Very good. Now, Rich Guthrie.
I like the title of that, Zen Bird Feeder.
It's, you know, it's a relaxing title.
There are so many messages in that title.
Okay, and Rich, you have a blog at the TU.
TimesUnion.com. Slant birding.
Okay, and your email address if somebody wants to contact you, Rich?
It'd be my name with my middle initial, Richard P., as in Peter, Guthrie, all one word, as they say, at gmail.com.
All right, we got one from Facebook here before we go back to the phones. John says, first of all, has a guess about the mystery bird, black-billed cockatoo?
Uh-uh.
All right, sorry about that, John. All right, here's John's question. Had a question about how to avoid rats and mice when feeding birds. Have a problem with them from neighborhood, so we don't feed birds, but I'd like to feed the birds.
Well, it's not easy. And the mice part, I actually don't mind the mice part, because at night, when the mice are out there picking up the little tidbits from the ground, the owls are picking up the mice, picking up the tidbits from the ground.
Okay.
And I have a little group of screech owls in my yard area, and I welcome there all the time. And this is, you know, just kind of a different take on a bird feeder.
Yeah.
The rest of it is, if you're really concerned about it, you got to have a more inaccessible feeder and reduce spillage. Nancy?
Yep, reduce spillage. So tray feeders, trays under feeders that catch any of the debris, catch any of the seed, and keeping the ground underneath your feeders as clean as you possibly can. So, and you know what? That's healthier for the birds as well. You're raking up that debris, which also includes bird poop. So it's actually healthier for the birds as well.
All right, fair enough. Back to the phones. It's Eric in New Paltz. Eric, you're on.
Hello. Rich?
Hi.
I've been a birder since I was a little kid. I'm 58.
Wow.
And at work, and I'm known to be a birder, and at work in Manhattan, this woman asked me about a white bird that's been with her sparrows for months, and I couldn't really help her except saying maybe a long sparrow or longspur or snow bunting, but that's very unlikely. And she said, I think it's an albino. And I've never in all my years seen an albino sparrow.
They're out there.
And I wanted to just hear your experience with that.
Yeah, I have actually both partial albinos or full albino birds that are out there. And with the millions and millions of birds that there are, every now and then you're going to run into one of these aberrations, one of these genetic short circuits in the system.
So this was in Queens, in the city. It was probably an albino house sparrow.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I've seen albinos, and I've seen photographs of other albinos of all one form or sort or another.
Hmm.
And some of them are not really all true albinos. You know, a true albino in the wild will have a very difficult time of it because typically they have reduced eyesight and mobility and also less protection against the wear and tear that feathers provide. So they have a rough go of it, but there are partial albinos, and every now and then you'll find a blackbird with black and white splotches on it, or a robin that has a bizarre pattern on the head, or
yeah,
the like.
Yeah, okay.
But they're out there,
and
I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case. The best bet in something like that is if you can, is to get a picture and let us know about it.
I asked her to do that, but
okay.
It was unsuccessful.
Okay, well. I think it's probably what you have surmised is an albino in the flock.
All right, Eric. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye now. It's Lynn's turn. Lynn in Shelburne Falls. You're on.
Thank you. Thank you, Nancy. Rich.
Rich.
I had it all done before I got
that's
here.
That's okay.
I forgot. I want to take a crack at your bird.
Oh, good.
Uh-oh.
I was going to say morning dove, but somebody else took it.
Uh-huh.
I thought maybe... You wouldn't do anything foul on me, would you?
I wouldn't do what?
Anything foul.
Oh, no, no.
All right,
so
hang on. Before you start, let's hear the sound again.
Okay, and it's legitimate. It goes, coo, 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 coo. Coo, 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 coo. Now, I will say, in terms of a hint, and maybe that you can bail out at this point, but it is what I said earlier. This is, what did I say? It was secret nothings.
Yeah.
Sweet nothings.
Sweet nothings.
Yeah.
And that's true. This is a comfort call.
Brenda Lee, I think, right?
No. Not Brenda. And this is a comfort call, as I like to say.
Mm.
And it's when the birds, and I use it almost daily, or at least I hear it quite often, and I use that to reassure them, and they say it back to me, the same thing.
Oh, sweet.
Yes.
All right, so what's your guess, Lynn?
Well, I got two ideas, but I'll...
Oh, go with them. Come on.
Okay, pigeon?
Nope.
Or an owl?
Okay.
Wow, that rules out a lot of things for other people.
Well, yeah. I'm sorry, Lynn. You know, there's no prize, so don't feel too bad about it.
I had one more. I just thought, first of all, my feed over the summer has gotten webs in it. The nuts and, you know, things that are in the nut bag have webs in them, and I know those things can happen to feed.
From mealy moths, are they like?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Is that a problem? Is it just more protein?
More protein, in my opinion.
Okay.
Yep. Absolutely. They're the Indian meal moth. As they reproduce and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's more of a bother to us than it is the birds.
Happy okay. accident, they call it.
Right. Good. That's good. One more little thing.
Sure.
I think somebody's scarlet macaw got loose.
Well. Okay. Nice guess. That's for that red bird that Phyllis saw over the highway, and. But I'm not buying it.
Okay.
Oh,
all right, but nice try.
Thanks,
right.
Lynn.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Okay. Maria in Olive Bridge, you're up.
Hi.
Hi.
I think I couldn't quite understand what the previous person said about the mysterious red bird. What did she guess? What was her guess?
Scarlet macaw, yes?
Oh, no. I was thinking escaped parrot.
Well, that's a scarlet macaw, and you're right on. And and here's the thing, I don't think so because Phyllis described it as a bird that was soaring or hovering, and parrots are notorious for their direct, swift, no nonsense flight.
Right. Well, I have a little question too. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay, it's unrelated. I called once before and talked about a robin that had been nesting on my porch and had mites the third nest. The first two were okay,
mm-hmm.
but the third nest was, 2 years in a row, the third nest was not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I had asked at the end of this time if I could take the nest down. And what I meant by that was not to get rid of the robin, but so that it would build a new one, because it's a nice place for the bird to nest. It's very safe.
Yes.
And, but I was thinking if I took down the one that's there, then she could start from scratch and it wouldn't have any mites already in it. It wouldn't have, like, the nymphs or whatever the larva that might winter over the few months. And so related to that, I'm wondering when would be a good time to take the nest down so that, I'm really, they're dead, the mites itself, because,
You're saying lice. Lice, as in,
I thought mites.
Mites. Mites. Yeah. Mites. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And also, we have a very well-developed grapevine on our fence, and there are at least three birds' nests. One's a robin, and then there are two smaller ones. And I'm wondering if I should take those down, too.
Okay. Well, my take on that is... you don't have to bother, I'll let Nancy pick up on this one as well. But the ones in the vines, leave them alone. They're fine. And the robin's nest, you can either take down or leave in place. Doesn't matter. If it's a good spot, the robins will find it again and reuse the site, not the nest. And
mm-hmm.
nest building is important part of the ritual of bonding that
mm-hmm.
birds share. And
mm-hmm.
so... some birds will utilize an old nest, but even in the process, they will refurnish it in some way.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. What she did from last year. She rebuilt the same nest from last year.
Well, I would see no reason why you shouldn't be able to take it down and then discard it well away so that if there are any remnant critters mm-hmm. in there, they'll be someplace else.
Okay.
Okay.
Maria, thanks a lot for the call. I think we lost you there.
Oh,
anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's go to Ike in Monticello. Ike, you're on.
Yeah, I'm on.
You bet.
Okay.
My entire life, I've lived in the Hudson Valley area, and I keep on hearing this really strange call, and I can't place what it is.
Okay. Okay. What you got?
NBC? No.
Star Wars.
Now, a little background.
Deeper than that.
Yes, okay. And where are you, roughly speaking?
Down in Sullivan, right?
In terms of a backyard wooded area or urban setting?
Wooded area, I would say. Rural.
Perhaps a mourning dove.
Really?
Let me try that on for size.
Okay.
And see if that works for you.
All right.
And they have a little bit of a reverse order, and there's kind of like a coo, 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 coo. I think you did a better job, and neither one of us did the right job, but it's closer to that. They have that long cooing sound to them.
Yeah, sort of like a. Three of those, and then a higher one, and then one lower one.
Yeah.
And I'm really not a bird person, so I'm not about to go and look at it.
You can.
Why don't you record it, Ike, and email a little wave file
and
or MP3 over
it.
To Rich.
Go track it down.
I haven't heard it so far during the fall, but...
Okay.
All right.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. And one other question, Ike, if you don't mind. This was, I presume, during the daytime, right? So we're ruling out an owl?
Sometimes during the day, sometimes more in like the early evening around dusk.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, don't rule out owl.
Okay.
And as Ray says, see if you could get a recording
yeah.
of it. Or better yet, a visual or a picture. But Will, I'm going to go with either a mourning dove or an owl. And the owl would be perhaps the barred owl, but I could do that for you, right?
All right, go. Well, please feel free, Maestro.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, here we go. With the...
Nope.
Ray, stop. Settle down.
Do it again.
Ike, what do you think?
That doesn't really sound like what it is.
No.
No, okay.
That was an outtake from the Planet of the Apes. Ike, thanks a lot for the call. That was okay. All right.
All right, we're going to stick with Mourning Dove for the time being,
okay.
And we'll revise that if we get a little more info.
All right, we're going to go to Connie in Leverett, who has a guess at the mystery bird. Hi, Connie.
Hi, I have a guess at two birds. The mystery bird, I wondered if it was a mourning dove.
No.
Okay, and my other guess is the guy who just called in with the bird call. It sounded to me a little bit like this, which, of course, is a white-throated sparrow. Of the guy who called in.
I gave that some thought, but he had the up part, what do you call that? The higher notes at the end, where the white-throated sparrow have it more at the front end.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay.
But I like your guess, and I like your guess.
Okay. Well, thank you for playing.
Thank you. Yeah,
okay.
Connie, thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. No one has gotten the mystery bird thus far.
Cool. And again, let me just say this. This is not often heard. You have to be sort of like on a sharing relationship with these guys. It's not something
A clue, right?
Oh, definitely. And again, if you, listeners to the show may recall that this is an activity that I engage in regularly, right in my very yard. And so I have built up this comfort zone these critters.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Rich isn't going to tell anybody if you don't get it, and then we'll do it on the next show.
Oh, no.
No? Oh, really?
That's not
fair. You're going to tell us at the end?
Well,
okay,
I don't
fair
know.
Enough.
We'll
fair
see.
Enough. Fair enough.
I think somebody will get it by then.
Oh, do you now? Let's go to Gary in Poughkeepsie. Gary, you're on.
Hey, good afternoon. How you doing?
Good.
I got a little story for you. I work down right alongside the Hudson River. And we have our share of eagles, ospreys, and we also have a pond here at work. And when the pond froze over one year, it was clear ice. I was watching this immature eagle landed on the ice, and he's looking through the ice like he sees a fish or something.
Good.
Well, all of a sudden, he starts going up in the air like a foot and a half, coming down like he's trying to break the ice to get through. It was hilarious.
Get out of here.
He kept doing it two or three times. Wish I had a video of it. It was so funny.
Well,
I just wanted to share that story with you.
Gary, that's terrific. I like it. And, you know, young eagles, it'll take him a while, but he'll learn sooner or later. You just
fair enough.
I wish I was there.
I'd be laughing there with you.
Gary,
great observation.
Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot. And let's go over to Naomi in West Sand Lake. Naomi, you have a guess.
Yes. I was thinking the mystery bird was a black-billed cuckoo.
Nope. And
no.
In fact,
rats.
I will say that that's what I first thought it was. But I didn't also add that I was hearing this thing in the middle of the winter.
Well, now you give
but
us
no,
a clue with
I
1 minute
say,
left. You give us
I
that clue.
I can say that because.
Can I make a second guess?
Go.
Go.
Crow.
Yes.
You,
I talked to Ray.
Yep.
Hey!
I have chased crows thinking they were cuckoos.
And
yes,
you know what
exactly.
You've won? You've won absolutely nothing.
Oh, you won a warm spot in our hearts.
Good
Let me
job.
Tell
you. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
Good job, Naomi. I love it.
All right. So, well, let's see. It's almost too late to take another call. Tell you what. Let's go to Larry on the road. Larry, you only have about 30 seconds. I apologize.
I'll give it a shot. Thank you.
Yes.
I just wanted to point out information about the Canada geese.
Yes, sir.
And that is, they didn't change their migration pattern. It's that the hand of man interfering caused the resident geese population to occur.
You're absolutely right.
In the late 60s, early 70s, one could buy a clipped pair to adorn one's gentleman farm pond.
You're absolutely right.
One of those farms, and the caretaker, sure enough, would take the clipped pair in the winter, but the babies that got hatched in the spring didn't get clipped.
You're right.
And it was neat. They would return to the same pond, and this went on in several farms all around the area, and before you know it, after a few years, you started developing this resident population.
Mm. Well, Larry, we're out of time.
Okay.
Sorry, my friend, but thank you for calling, and thanks to Nancy Costello of Wild Birds Unlimited. Thank you for being here.
Saratoga Springs.
We'll check out the Zen Bird Feeder blog. And Rich Guthrie will check out your blog at the timesunion.com
Correct.
/ birding.
Correct.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody who called in today. Support comes from the Henyon Bakery Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com. Unison Arts Center, New Paltz, presenting the band Matutu, performing a blend of Brazilian, bluegrass, and Americana rhythms in concert Saturday, November 9th at 8, unisonarts.org. And McCabe and Mack, attorneys at law, Poughkeepsie, New York, providing legal services for residential and commercial real estate, zoning, and environmental issues throughout the Hudson Valley, mccm.com. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, who was at the controls today. Thanks to Patrick Garrett, who answered the phones, Tom Job, our web whiz, and our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. It's Moyers & Company at this time tomorrow. Medical Monday next week with Alan Chartok, back from vacation. Pediatrician Dr. Richard Solby. News is next. Have a good one.